Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Warkey, Judge Torrey, Judge Smith.
Please be seated.
The Honorable Renee L. Warkey presiding.
And good morning, everyone. We have a variety of matters set for our oral and non-oral calendar today. I'll ask our marshal to call the case for presentation.
The first case is A191732 in the matter of the civil commitment of Peter Gerard Lonergan.
Counsel, you're familiar with appellate procedure. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your case, with an additional 5 minutes being reserved to appellant counsel for rebuttal if you choose to utilize that. When you're ready to go, please state your name for recording purposes and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. And with that said, appellant, when you are ready, you can go ahead. The podium does go up or down. I think you may know that, but in case you don't, you can adjust it to your height preference.
Probably do. All right. Good morning. My name is David Janey, J-A-E-H-N-E. I represent Peter Lonergan, the appellant herein. Mr. Lonergan's appeal is kind of simple. We had a phase one hearing before the three-judge panel, and they took it a 4102 motion to dismiss. We think that was an error. Phase one hearing is to be considered in the light most favorable to the appellant, and what we were arguing there is that he's in remission in a controlled environment, and if that's the case, he would be entitled to relief. They applied the 4102 rule, and the problem with that rule is that it speaks of weighing the evidence and the credibility of the testimony.
Doesn't our precedent, though, Mr. Janey, indicate that that's an appropriate procedure for dismissal after the phase one? I mean, there's the Coker case, there's a Larson case. They've all recognized 4102 as the appropriate method to consider those motions. So,
well,
is that your strongest argument here about this appeal, that the rule doesn't apply? You know, we're bound by the precedent, so I can't imagine we'll defer from that.
All right. Well, it still has to do with him being viewed in light most favorable to him.
I agree.
And that light was the only witness with scientific basis was Dr. Ahlberg, and he testified that my client was in remission in the controlled environment, and he said he didn't know what he'd do if he were around children, if he were released.
But isn't that because your client has stopped cooperating with the treatment program?
Well, he still goes to his therapist. They still, you know, they stated they didn't have any evidence about how he was currently doing, but he meets with the therapist weekly or biweekly or something like that, so they still do know that he's not showing any signs of being interested in children or looking at that at all, really, for the last 28, 29 years.
What about his statements, though, that the female child that he offended against, that he pled guilty to, that he somehow has minimized that, even to this day, 27 years later, as not being evidence that he was sexually attracted to children, that it just kind of happened accidentally? It seems to me, as the doctor said, to be pretty pedophilic thinking still.
Well, it was at the time. I just don't think he's had that, though, for 28 or 29 years.
Well, he just made those statements recently, though, didn't he?
I'm not sure of that.
Okay.
I'll have to refer to the appeal for that.
Sure.
Okay. That's really our argument, that the light most favorable to him would state that he is in remission in a locked environment, and we're asking for discharge, but we're primarily asking for provisional discharge, have him go to a treatment center and have a schedule and maybe get a job eventually and that sort of thing. We think he's ready for that. He is only finished phase one at the treatment facility, but they did allow him to go into phase two classes, so he's completed most of those also. And then they did another group of people trying to get through who are also interested in phase two. They did individual groups with that, and that went on for quite a while too, outside of the treatment group. So it's our request that you give him a phase two hearing. He'll have to prove the fact that he's in remission in a closed environment, and probably have to prove what that means about his provisional release. But that's what the phase two hearing is for, not what the phase one hearing was for. All right? All right, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bonnet.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Michael Leonard on behalf of the respondent in this matter, the Commissioner of Human Services. In a phase one hearing, a civilly committed person seeking provisional or full discharge bears the burden of presenting a prima facie case with competent evidence showing that he is entitled to the requested relief. To make out a prima facie case for provisional discharge, the petitioner must show that he no longer needs treatment and supervision in his current setting, and that the conditions of his provisional discharge plan would provide reasonable protections for the public and allow him to adjust successfully to the community. The requirements for full discharge are similar, but there is no ongoing supervision or provisional discharge plan, and so what the petitioner must show is that he is capable of adjusting to open society, that he's no longer dangerous to the public, and that he does not need treatment or supervision at all. Appellant's main argument appears to be that the panel improperly weighed the evidence in determining that appellant did not make out a prima facie case. But while appellant does correctly identify the applicable legal standard, it's not at all clear why appellant thinks the panel weighed the evidence. The panel's order does not contain credibility findings, and appellant does not identify any qualified witnesses who opine that he meets criteria for either provisional or full discharge. Only the court-appointed examiner, Dr. Allberg, was qualified to opine on appellant's treatment progress, risk of sexual recidivism, and diagnoses. Dr. Allberg unambiguously testified that appellant is appropriately diagnosed with pedophilic disorder, that he does not participate in treatment groups, and that he has not shared any information about his sexual arousal template. Now, appellant seizes on some testimony from Dr. Allberg to argue that his pedophilic disorder is in remission. But as the panel's order recognizes, the full context for this statement is that Dr. Allberg testified that the pedophilic disorder could be considered in remission in a controlled environment only because appellant has not had an opportunity to offend since being civilly committed. Indeed, appellant himself testified that he had not been in the same room with a child in approximately 10 years. This does not mean that appellant no longer has pedophilic disorder. It doesn't mean that he is no longer dangerous. As Dr. Allberg testified, the reason we don't know more about appellant's current arousal template is because he has not been participating in treatment. Now, if that's enough to get to a phase two hearing, then the panel really needs to do phase two hearings for every non-participant who is not actively offending within MSOP's secure perimeter. It would do so only to ultimately deny those petitions due to a lack of evidence of progress in treatment or decreased risk to the public. Appellant has no explanation of how this would advance the goals of the Commitment Act or the interests of justice generally. Appellant also argues that the panel's decision must be overturned because Dr. Allberg is biased against him in some way. But even if true, this would not require reversal. Dr. Allberg was the only competent witness to testify regarding appellant's treatment progress, risk of recidivism, and diagnoses. But even if Dr. Allberg's testimony were discarded entirely, this wouldn't change the fact that there's not competent evidence that appellant meets the statutory criteria for discharge.
Well, why isn't the doctor's opinion that he's in remission at least enough to get to the phase two hearing as to whether or not he still needs to be treated in his current setting if we're from a provisional discharge standpoint?
Dr. Ahlberg did testify in that vein, but the context for that testimony is that we could say he's in remission with the qualifier in a controlled environment, but it's only because he hasn't had the opportunity to offend. It does not mean that the diagnosis of pedophilic disorder is no longer appropriate. Perhaps that's something that could be determined if Mr. Lonergan were actually participating in treatment groups and disclosed more about his sexual attraction and arousal template. But Dr. Ahlberg was very clear that really that qualifier is only appropriate just because of the environment that he's in.
Did he make his statements regarding the sexual behavior with the young girl that he pled guilty to? Were those statements made to Dr. Ahlberg and in relation to his evaluation for these hearings? You understand what I'm asking? He made some comment that, you know, it was basically an accident, that I had no sexual attraction to this child. Mm-hmm. I won't characterize it, but he did make those statements. I asked Mr. Janey the question. He wasn't quite sure when or in what context those statements were made. My recollection of the record is that he made those statements to Dr. Ahlberg during this evaluation for these proceedings. Do you know the answer to that question?
I was present at the examination, Your Honor. I don't recall specifically. I do recall generally that he does deny some of his offense conduct, including that offense, and I believe that topic generally came up during the examination. That's my recollection.
This is somewhat of a general question, more of a comment maybe, but appellant does try to, I don't want to say attack, but appellant does challenge the competency of Dr. Ahlberg as far as his credentials and the fact that he's never opined any differently. But in reading that, you know, what's a person to do? Is Dr. Ahlberg the one and only? I mean, there is some reason we should take a look at these facts that he doesn't come out on the side of someone who is being held, as the appellant is in this case. Is there anybody, that's my question, is there anybody else out in the field? That's all I ever see is Dr. Ahlberg.
Oh, sure. And even in this case, the examiner initially appointed was, I believe, Dr. Ann Pascucci. The record reflects that appellant requested appointment of a new examiner before the phase one hearing, I think shortly after the order appointing the first examiner came out, and at that point, Dr. Ahlberg was appointed. He is one that whose name I do see in a lot of these, but there are several. So the record really does not include any evidence of Dr. Ahlberg's purported bias either. The only evidence is the fact that he stated that he has done a lot of these examinations and that he has seldom recommended provisional discharge. The appellant really gives us no reason to believe that this is attributable to bias as opposed to any other reason. Simply put, Dr. Ahlberg's purported bias is unsupported by any record evidence, and even if it were true, it would not be grounds for reversal. In fact, appellant himself relies on portions of Dr. Ahlberg's testimony when he, you know, tells us that his pedophilic disorder is in remission. So even if Dr. Ahlberg's testimony were discarded entirely, that would not be a reason to reverse. Finally, Your Honors, appellant asserts some due process concerns related to the panel's failure to schedule a second phase hearing. But this court's decision in Caprice versus Gomez holds that there's no due process violation in requiring a committed person to bear an initial burden of going forward with evidence showing that he's entitled to provisional or full discharge. Appellant gives no reason why this precedent should be overturned, and as discussed, he failed to meet that burden by coming forward with competent evidence that he meets the statutory criteria. If there are no further questions, I respectfully request that the panel's order be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Leonard.
Thank you.
Mr. Janey, anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you to both parties for appearing today and submitting argument in addition to your briefs. The matter is under advisement. A decision will be issued in the 90-day statutory timeframe. This court will now recess. We need to set up for our interactive video hearings.